This week on the podcast, you're going to hear this.
And I can tell you, he was terrible. He was god-awful last year. Wasn't sad to see him go one bit.
You might also hear this.
For a brief moment in time at my bachelor party, Jamarcus Russell had the lead on the scoreboard, and all was right with the world, and it immediately got snatched away.
But you're not going to hear this.
Well, they're living together right now.
Are they?
He's living at Von Miller's house. Yeah, he's living at Von Miller's house.
I did not know that.
That news just got Von Miller pissed off. They
We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the Superfans.
But they are who we thought they were.
And we let them off the hook. That's right. This is the Next Fan Up podcast that you are listening to. I am your Kansas City Chiefs superfan, Nick, and you are listening to the podcast that is by the fans for the fans. We have three other superfans here looking to break down the latest news in the NFL and get into some other topics. We're going to be talking about the top draft busts of all time and also our Mr. NFL pageant, but especially when it comes to draft busts, I do think it's fairly apt that we're joined here by our Cleveland Browns superfan. How you doing, Ben?
Doing well.
Good to hear it. And I'm also joined by our Saints superfan, Chris. What's up, Chris?
Doing well. How are you, sir?
I am doing just fine. And last, and yeah, actually probably least, it is my arch nemesis. It is the Oakland Raiders superfan, Monty. What's up, Monty?
What's up, man? I figured in honor of biggest draft bust, I better grab a bottle of cough syrup instead of a cold beer, as long as we're going to dredge up Mr. Jamarcus Russell. I figured I'd sip on the scissor and give you your moment.
Got to be robo-tripping for the trip down memory lane in Oakland, yeah. If this is one of your first times listening to the Next Fan Up podcast, there's a lot of ways you can get in touch with us and see our content. You can find a lot of stuff on our Facebook page, which is typing Next Fan Up into the search bar on Facebook. You can also find us on Twitter at NFU Podcast. There we'll be posting our shows and putting out polls on our sort of, we have two mock drafts in a way going here. We're running a poll-driven fan mock draft, fans of our show. And then we're doing our own mock draft, which is really the funnest part of what we do here is the fact that we have a fan representative of all 32 teams. And so therefore our mock draft is actually made up of picks and trades made by super fans of every individual team, each with their own boards, each following their own team strategy. And so we're actually grinding through, I think we're at round six of the mock draft, and we'll be announcing those picks starting this coming week. So definitely tune in for that. But before we get too far down the road and talking about our drafts and all of that, we do have to turn over to some sad news in the NFL, which is that former Saints defensive end Will Smith was shot and killed this weekend in what was apparently a road rage incident where he was rear-ended, and after a verbal altercation, he was shot and killed, and his wife was also shot twice, I believe, and is now recovering. He played, I believe, a 9-year career in New Orleans and was a stalwart there during the tough times of Katrina and the good years as well. And so, Chris, you know, what did Will Smith, you know, mean to the team, and what was your reaction to the news?
It was hard. You know, I got the news first thing this morning when I woke up. My Twitter feed it blew up with the news. I mean, what he meant to the team, it's, you know, it was announced he was inducted into the Saints Hall of Fame. They're going to have the ceremony this season. He was the enforcer inside the locker room. He was Sean Payton's guy. If there was ever an issue, he was the one that would take care of it. I would honestly say next to Breeze, it seems he was the most respected player in that locker room. Even players like Jonathan Vilma has come out well before this happened and talked about how he's helped his career. And you know, and then you have the fact that he's a father. You know, he's a husband. His foundation, where there's a will, there's a way, has been huge in rebuilding that city. He was drafted before Katrina. He was there for Katrina. He came back. the BP oil spill. I mean, everything that's happened down there, he spearheaded a lot of the charities to get that city back up and running. So, and in fact, actually, he was back down there with Peter Thomas when this happened for a charity event before. And then he had something in New York, I believe, Wednesday.
Yeah, another wrinkle in this is that, as you're saying, the suspects here who, I mean, who allegedly fired the shots and it was his gun that was recovered is Cardell Hayes, who apparently was something of a high school football star down in New Orleans about, 10 years ago. And interestingly enough, Tyrann Mathieu, who's also from the area, actually knew him. And they I don't know, I guess through high school football way back when. And he put out, I think on Facebook, I'm reading this off of Pro Football Talk, that, the Mathieu was talking about, he knew the guy and he put out a fairly long statement about really the fact that with the economic situation the way it is and there is a culture of violence down there in New Orleans, which he says is actually getting worse, saying that, back when he was there, I mean, yeah, there weren't a whole lot of opportunities, but at least, the grass is being cut in the parks. There was stuff for young people to do. But now it's just, he pointed to, the music and the culture of sort of gang violence being the only real inspiration for a lot of these guys. And that's leading to more and more violence. So, it certainly is a tragedy, and it's interesting that it has so many connections throughout the league.
And every time I go down there, I try to find groups of like-minded sports fans to get together and to discuss. And the one common thread that you find down in New Orleans right now are most of the people, I'm not saying everybody, but most of the people I have spoken to hate living there now. And which is sad, because New Orleans is an incredible city with an amazing culture. But they'll tell you, since the storm, the violence has become tenfold. I retweeted an old tweet from 2012, I believe, of Will Smith actually drawing attention to, I believe there was 23 murders in 20 days or 20 murders in 23 days in New Orleans. And he was pleading for the violence to stop.
Yeah. Well, we can only hope for the best for both the Smith family and the community down there. They're all in our thoughts. And there's been an outpouring of grief and support for them throughout the league. It's very clear that Will Smith was a very well-respected member of the NFL community. But moving on to other news that's broken since we last had a show. I mean, we did talk about the fact that the Jets really long-term, I think 10-year left tackle DeBrickashaw Ferguson retired fairly suddenly. There were talks that that they were trying to get him to lower his contract, but the 32-year-old decided to hang him up. And within 24 hours, it seems, there was a trade that had been agreed to with the Broncos and the Jets for the Broncos to send their left tackle Ryan Clady to the Jets along with a 7th-round pick for the Jets' 5th-round pick. That is to say, basically nothing. Clady hasn't really been fully healthy for at least a couple of years now, ever since having a Liz Frank injury in early 2013. If healthy, I mean, he was about as good of a left tackle as there was in the NFL. The question is whether or not he can stay healthy and really fill in the role of Ferguson, who would never get injured for the Jets. First of all, I mean, before we get into all the other, the ramifications in terms of other moves that can be made here, what do you guys think of the move itself?
I guess I'll start. I'll just say that I was really happy that the move happened, because there was a lot of speculation about Joe Thomas from the Browns being moved to the Jets. And so just from that perspective, I'm glad that the Broncos and the Jets made a deal and it wasn't with the Browns. That was my first reaction.
I was just going to say, as a Raiders fan, I was a little disappointed that Clady got traded out of the division. Khalil Mack, I think, put up 5 sacks in Denver last year, and I was just hoping for more of the same in 2016.
Well, and what this move, I think, was as much about the money that it changes on both teams' caps as it was about the the actual positional changes, in that it frees up a bit of space for the Broncos, who that's been the real impediment for their pending or, you know, somewhat agreed to or explored trade for 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick. I would suppose this would make that trade more likely to happen. And at the same time, for the Jets, getting Ferguson's contract off their books with his retirement and bringing in Clady, which apparently involved a pay cut as well, that makes it a little bit easier for them to try to squeak Ryan Fitzpatrick back onto their roster. These are two moves that we've been talking about in terms of those quarterbacks that it just seems like, you know, I feel like we talk about every week because there seems to always be news and they never end up happening. Chris, what do you think about the, you know, where things stand with the quarterbacks and why these franchises haven't yet gotten themselves a real quarterback?
I mean, first off, speaking of both a Raiders fan and a Chiefs fan, absolute best case scenario for you guys. If Kaepernick goes to Denver and they traded one off injured left tackle for another, I don't know how you guys aren't ecstatic about that. I think Kaepernick's complete garbage at this point. So, congratulations on the mighty falling in your division. With the Jets getting, possibly able to get Fitzgerald back, this is a win-win for them. They do get at least a body at this point that hopefully can stay healthy, and they're able to get a quarterback in. You asked why nobody's made a move on a starting caliber NFL quarterback right now. It's because I don't think there is one, with the exception of Fitzpatrick, and he has seemed to price himself out of the equation. So it's tough sledding up there right now. If you're a team like Denver and Kaepernick's your savior, you're really happy you won the Super Bowl last year, because it's going to be a while before you get to do that again.
Well, as bad as you're feeling if Kaepernick is your savior, I think you got to be feeling even worse, given reports that Kubiak has spoken to and had some conversations with Johnny Manziel, and there are reports out there saying that it's likely that Manziel will end up on the Broncos at some point, or at least, you know, figure into their QB plans. On top of this, you know, Von Miller came out and said that he totally supports, you know, bringing Johnny onto the Broncos, and said that if he was in charge of the team, he would definitely, you know, bring Johnny Football in. To which I say, as a Chiefs fan, please put Von Miller in charge of the Broncos personnel decisions. That would make me very, very happy. But this one I got to give to Ben here. Ben, you know, you watched more Johnny than any of us, and had your hopes maybe on him at some point. What can you say about this quarterback and this move?
Oh man. Yeah. That is not a title that I take with pride. I have, I don't know. I'd rather pick a guy out of stands or something. I don't know. Johnny Manziel, just, he's not good. He doesn't really do anything well. He's bad in the locker room. He has all kinds of, you know, off the field distractions. It's not durable. I don't know. There's all, I can't think of really anything positive that he does. I mean, if you're trying to choose between him or Kaepernick, like, I don't know. Like, I guess you just try running the ball every game. I don't know, because they're both bad.
If you're picking between Kaepernick or Manziel, I've got two words for you. Hefty lefty. Jared Lorenzen. Get him to the NFL. He's a much better option.
Maybe Von Miller can play quarterback. Since he seems to, think so highly of all of his, GM abilities.
He wants quarterback money. He may have to.
Yeah, and honestly, how much worse than Johnny Manziel can he be? Can he be Tebow bad?
I'd take Tebow over Johnny Football. Easy. I mean, that's not even hard.
It's your fact for having this discussion. Help at all.
Yeah.
Well, it is, I think, apt that we transition from Johnny Manziel into our next topic, which is the biggest draft busts of all time. he is not actually on this list, and the list I chose, obviously there's a lot of people that are trying to look back now that we're in draft season into the drafts of yore and the decisions that didn't quite stick. I chose this one because basically it had the shortest ones, and I know that we all have our own our own ideas about who was the worst for our teams or the worst of all time. But I went to sportscheatsheet.com, and we'll post this on our Facebook page as well if you guys want to talk about it too. But it, in terms of its top six in recent NFL history, its number six is Aaron Curry, the linebacker drafted by the Seattle Seahawks. And he was later traded to the Oakland Raiders for a seventh-round pick in the 2012 draft, 3 years after being drafted. That is that's usually not the kind of production you're looking to get out of a linebacker taken in the top 10. But he did end up on your team there, Monty. How do you feel about Aaron Curry?
I mean, he kind of going into the draft, if you remember, he literally was listed as the safest player in the draft. I mean, there were some other players with higher upside, but I mean, I just remember that draft. He was one of those guys coming in where you just kind of figured pencil him in for a good 10-year career and he'll be good. Maybe not great, but good. And when you look at, you know, just that first round, I think these lists of the biggest busts really are dependent upon what other players you passed up on in order to get this guy. And, you know, if you're looking for linebackers from that draft, Brian Arakpo and Brian Cushing went later on in that draft, and Aaron Curry. Man, when the Raiders traded a seventh-round pick, I'm not going to lie to you, man. I'm like, oh, I remember that guy. He's supposed to be good. And, you know, he just wasn't. So it happened quickly.
Now, I'm glad you pointed out that he was considered to be such a safe prospect, because to be perfectly honest, I remember that draft, and I remember being furious that the Chiefs picked Eric Berry over Aaron Curry. One of those proud moments where I'm glad I am not in charge.
Exactly.
But moving on to the guys who are in charge, number five on this list is a Brown, Tim Couch, who was, you know, an extremely successful University of Kentucky quarterback, was the number one overall selection for the Browns in 99. And it, you know, piling it on Couch seems almost a little bit unfair, just given how many other quarterbacks have played for the Browns and been as bad or worse. But he did finish his career with 64 touchdowns and 67 interceptions, and was released 4 years later after the 2003 season. Being the first overall means that if you're anything short of an Olympian, people are going to pile on you for it. But, you know, what do you think, Ben? Does he deserve to be on this list?
No, not at all. I mean, if you guys remember, he was the first pick of the new expanded franchise draft. And after the success of the Panthers, making it into the playoffs, like pretty early on into their franchise career, the NFL kind of sort of changed the rules in terms of how you could acquire players with a new franchise. And so Tim Couch basically walked into, you know, like a paper thin offensive line in front of him, zero skill set players around him. And if you remember, he was like Derek Carring it up before Derek Carr was Derek Carr, just getting, you know, sacked left and right. I think he got like 70, like, I don't know, like something like 50 or 60 sacks, like, you know, in his first couple of seasons, each season. He was just beat to a pulp and, you know, surrounded by just a bunch of buffoons, like picking players around him. I mean, if you want to talk about some busts, I'll throw Gerard Warren into the mix, you know, old Big Money, who was just a total waste of talent and didn't have half the heart that Couch had. I mean, the guy was just beat to death. Like, it's not his fault. I mean, I still remember him, you know, the only quarterback us to the playoffs, beating Pittsburgh, several times in his career, which is not something that a lot of Browns quarterbacks do. I don't think it's fair to say he's one of the biggest draft busts.
I agree. Cleveland has drafted quarterbacks in the past couple of years that I think were bigger busts than Tim Couch.
Oh, absolutely. Brandon Whedon, Johnny Football, for sure. Brady Quinn. I'd put Brady Quinn above Tim Couch.
Well, fact that you can rattle off five QB busts from the last 17 years is, that's quite an accomplishment, though. It would seem almost like throwing darts at the
blind. Consistently terrible.
I mean, it does seem like throwing darts at like a draft board blindfolded would almost yield you better results than that.
I say for biggest bust, can we use the Brown scouting department? Can we trade Tim Couch from the scouting department at Cleveland?
We shouldn't beat up on them too much, because they did give us one really good prospect, which is the one-year Cleveland Browns scout, Matt Williamson, who's still tearing it up on the radio waves, including on ours, every now and then. I think he is the best part of the Browns scouting department over the last the last maybe couple of decades.
He gave him Josh Cribbs.
There you go.
True.
Well, yeah. Well, speaking of a guy who basically never had any good tape, it was the good old Tony Mandarich, who was drafted as a number two overall pick in the 1989 draft, was billed as the incredible bulk because of his huge size and stature and his really good career at Michigan State. But he was an absolute liability constantly for the Packers. He lasted only two seasons before being cut. I saw a documentary of him actually recently where he basically was just a full-blown alcoholic, you know, being, you know, drunk at practice and games, and later became addicted to painkillers and entered rehab. And he returned for a three-year stint with the Colts, but was never really a dominant force. And I think, you know, in terms of a player just dropping from the high point of being, you know, a very high pick to being absolutely useless on the field, he may actually be the worst ever.
What makes it even worse is the three people drafted immediately after him were first ballot Hall of Famers, Barry Sanders, Derek Thomas, and Deion Sanders. I mean, that's
ouch.
Just that's insane.
That's pretty bad.
I had heard rumors, and I obviously don't know, but I'm a Raiders fan, so I'm into conspiracy theories and conjecture, but I'd heard that part of the reason he was so dominant in college is he might have been, performance enhanced. And when he got into the pros, they had a different set of, you know, testing standards. So I don't know, but part of the incredible bulk, I think, was tongue in cheek because there were whispers around that guy, like, how could he be that good? And the fact that he immediately dropped off just kind of feeds that theory.
To continue on that, there's also stories that he, because if you remember, he came back. He retired for a while, came back, and actually wasn't bad in Indianapolis for a couple of years. And the rumors are that he essentially found a loophole and was able to start using something else to give him similar results, and then came back to the NFL to cash in on it.
I guess that that is a lesson there. If your guy is dependent upon roids, he's probably not a great number two overall pick. Well, but speaking to another franchise that gets dumped on for long stretches of awful drafting, particularly at the top of the draft, they have as number three on their list here, Charles Rogers, drafted by the Detroit Lions. And, you know, there was, the Lions are another one where that period of time under Matt Millen as the president and CEO there, there were just so many bad high picks. But, you know, when this guy was drafted second overall in 2003, I mean, there was a lot of expectation that he was going to be, you know, the best wide receiver. And how many of these best wide receivers have the Lions actually drafted over the years? But instead, he did almost nothing. He broke his collarbone twice, only played in six games, and in 2005 was suspended after violating the NFL's drug policy for a third time and was outright released. So he literally produced almost zero for the Lions after all that.
Here's from Michigan State as well, which is the same as the last guy we were drafted, which I think just kind of goes and proves nothing good comes from Michigan.
But does, Monty, does that production, does that make you end up feeling good about Darius Heyward-Bey?
Darius Heyward-Bey has been in the league for however long. I mean, he definitely wasn't a good first-round pick, but he didn't get kicked out of the league in 2 years. I mean, I think he's still on the Pittsburgh roster, so definitely not my favorite, and thanks for bringing it up, but, you know, DHB, I could name worse wide receivers than DHB.
Well, apparently he's a decent punt returner or kickoff returner. He's returning the ball, I think, more than anything else in Pittsburgh. Granted, I think, to be fair, he may be a part of the best wide receiving core in the league. So, it's hard to get balls thrown your way, you know, when you're lining up with those guys. But I'm not done with you, Monty, because number two on this list is the great, the Hercules, the most unstoppable, off-the-charts draft prospect that there's ever been, probably going into this sort of modern age of the NFL, where we had the combine and we're able to totally get all this guy's metrics. This guy was amazing, and he did not do much for you. That is Jamarcus Russell, the largest, baddest quarterback.
Shocked and appalled that there is a list that exists about the biggest draft bust that does not have Jamarcus Russell number one. I think there's room for debate, but Jamarcus Russell, I think the Raiders were paying him years after he was even off the team. I think he had, like, it was before the renegotiated CBA where, like, rookie quarterbacks got a crazy money more than the vets. I think the Raiders ended up paying him, like, $36, $37 million. And, yeah, he is terrible. Like I said, it's conspiracy theories, but, you know, I think Mike Mayock still says to this day that Jamarcus Russell had the most impressive pro day. So if wearing gym shorts and throwing a football from your knees matters to anyone, Jamarcus Russell was really good at that. But Al Davis, if you believe some of the conspiracy theories, he loved John Elway. He had a trade in the works trying to trade Howie Long for John Elway back in the 83 draft. And he was on record saying Jamarcus Russell had the strongest arm he had seen since John Elway, and he wasn't going to pass it up. The part that really sucks and just pissed everyone off was that was the Megatron draft. Everyone in the world knew you should take Megatron. It's one of the – I mean, that was the most I've ever, like, yelled and been pissed off, like, during the draft, like, swearing, throwing bottles. Like, I just – Jamarcus Russell could have been an average quarterback, but I still would have been pissed off. Like, you had Megatron. There's no one else in that draft you should have taken. And, yeah, the one redeeming factor I'll say about Jamarcus Russell is I was at a Raiders game. It was a Monday night home opener. It was my bachelor party. I got 20 of my buddies to meet me in Oakland. None of us got arrested. We all made it to the game. Jamarcus Russell had the lead with like 2 minutes left. It was an awesome pass right over the shoulder coming right at us. Touchdown, took the lead. And then Ken's Superchargers just went right down the field with Darren Sproles and took a huge dump all over my chest. But for a brief moment in time at my bachelor party, Jamarcus Russell had the lead on the scoreboard and all was right with the world. And it immediately got snatched away. And yeah. I could go on for another 20 minutes, but I think I'm going to go grab another beer. It just hurts too much.
Well, that's probably wise. I mean, it is interesting about Jamarcus Russell because there is a real theme here emerging in terms of these draft busts and that, again, he was off the charts in terms of physicality, but everyone around him said that he was just really difficult to coach, was a lazy player. And in the end, he was arrested for possession of codeine. And at some point ballooned up well over 300 pounds and tried to make a comeback. I vaguely remember when he was trying to do this, but he was never signed. I mean, no one believed in this guy. And it just goes to show that, I think a lot of the biggest busts here, I think everybody was looking at parts of their tape and seeing potential, and they clearly have the physical traits. But then you just can't ignore these red flags if they're going to lead this guy to become just a total sociopath once he gets a bit of money.
Well, Adrian Peterson, too. Adrian Peterson was in that draft. Megatron
and Joe Thomas.
I just
want to make a comment about Jamarcus's weight. It hasn't seemed to stop Ben Roethlisberger at all being that big and fat.
Well, that is true. I don't know that Roethlisberger is that big, though. I mean, he's huge, but over 300 pounds? I mean...
Not 300 pounds, and I've actually heard that he's slimmed down. He lost like 15 pounds this year, so he should be able to trap women in bathrooms all across Pittsburgh without getting caught.
The girls in Georgia are getting faster. He's going to shed some weight.
Pounds for him. Okay. He's just skipping one midnight snack, you know, no big deal.
All right, well.
I'm sorry, Steelers Greg, I guess. I got a little fired up. Jamarcus Russell always gets me boiled up. I apologize. That was allegedly, twice on separate occasions, settled out of court, allegedly.
I thought it was three times. There's only two? Am I getting confused with him running his motorcycle into a windshield?
I don't know the full story. We'll have to ask Greg.
Yeah. We'll have to have a fireside chat about Roethlisberger's misdeeds one of these days. But that does bring us to the number one.
He did all that crap back then, not now.
Yeah, he's sort of kept out of trouble for a few seasons going. It's now just all of his receivers that are and running backs that are getting into it now. But yeah. So that does bring us to our number one person on the list here. And I actually agree with you, Monty, that I just can't see how you can put anybody over Jamarcus Russell here, but they did. they put Ryan Leaf over him, who was similarly a disaster. In this case, it was a bit unique in that he was a disaster both as a player and later as a coach. He was drafted, of course, as a quarterback, again, billed to be this next, you know, this next top guy, all that kind of stuff, by the Chargers, played 4 years for four different teams, 14 touchdowns, 36 interceptions, QB rating of 50 for his career. But what's interesting is that he actually, you know, left and became a quarterback coach at West Texas A&M. And then his life spiraled out of control with drugs and other brushes with the law, and is now serving a 7-year sentence for burglary and drug possession in Montana. He's now been released. He was released in 2014. Either way, in terms of falling, you know, a fall from grace from second overall, that is pretty difficult to top.
Just to get on some stats for Ryan Leaf here. He had a career completion percentage of 48.4, and his touchdown to interception ratio was 14 to 36. He had played in the NFL for 4 years and only amassed 14 touchdowns.
That's pretty difficult to talk.
Good times. I remember those were good times. But I will say for Ryan Leaf that it was not a slam dunk when that was the Peyton Manning versus Ryan Leaf debate. And I remember going in that draft, there was like legitimate debate. It wasn't for sure that the Colts were going to go with Manning. And I think, and this is just from like Sports Talk Radio, but I think the Colts had printed up a Ryan Leaf jersey because they were still like deciding who they were going to go with. And I think that jersey hangs in like the Dan Patrick studio of his radio show. he definitely failed, but I think a lot of people missed because they were all, I mean, he was rated as high as anyone coming out of college.
To go over who was drafted after him, from my hometown, one of the greatest corners of all time, Charles Woodson, was two picks after, and then Randy Moss a little bit after that. So that's kind of sting a little.
And so now we've seen, you know, sort of all of these guys that we saw out there and that blew up. I mean, is there anybody here that you think, you know, really should take the cake above these guys that came out, you know, in the last 15 years or so?
Vernon Dolson coming out of Ohio State was supposed to be the next Bruce Smith. He was a physical beast, and he couldn't even crack the special teams lineup. He was terrible.
I remember that. I remember when he was still on the roster for the Jets, you know, in the year that Hard Knocks was in New York. And it was like this really, they made a whole narrative about it. And it was this really big deal that he got like a sack in like the last minute of a preseason game. And, it, you know, against fourth stringers not the crowd, but the coaching staff went wild.
Yeah, he was. He actually played against, who was that? Was it Jake Long? Was the offensive tackle that came out of Michigan, went number one overall, the Dolphins that year? And I believe Vernon Golston was the only one in college to get like a sack against him. I think he beat him like twice in the Ohio State Michigan game that year.
It was Jake Long. He destroyed him. Yeah, he destroyed him. He blew up his senior. Again, somebody who there's rumors about steroids. He stole Jake Long's lunch that day.
Yeah.
I remember that all too well.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a big reason why I think his draft stock went so high. The only other person that I would think of that deserves to be on this list in recent memory would be Danny Watkins. That I think he was an offensive guard drafted by the Eagles pretty high in the first round. I don't even know if he ever even played. He was like the firefighter guy or whatever.
Yeah, I always sort of wondered what happened to that guy. I mean, I think it was a relatively low or like late first round pick. So I think that's why it didn't go quite as noticed. But yeah, he was like a Canadian firefighter who only played football for 2 years in the first round.
Yeah, he was out of Baylor, and he was like an offensive guard. I think he was kind of old, and he was like similar, you know, it was supposed to be like a safe pick, very much like Aaron Curry. And I think he just like didn't have like I don't think he loved football. I think that was his biggest issue.
You know, looking now at this 2016 draft class, we've had there are definitely some guys in here with some injury concerns. There's definitely some guys with some character concerns. And those are the ones who have really danced all over mock drafts. It really depends on, you know, what they're saying in these meeting rooms and you know, what the doctors are telling the coaches. But even that aside, I mean, are there any guys that you see that are consistently mocked towards the top of first round drafts, mock drafts that have bust written on them? What do you think, Chris?
If you want to go first round, you know, Kim DJ is still in that talk. I don't think he stays clean enough to stay in the NFL long. But I think the most overhyped player this year would be Derrick Henry. I don't really. I think very few teams, I think, can actually use him correctly. And even then, he's got Alabama running back tunnel vision. He closes his eyes and he puts his head down.
I think that with Robert and DJ, like they're so well prepped and they're so well coached going into this draft process. Like if you stumble with an interview question, you're just not really doing your homework. For you to get busted now, right before like the draft or right in your senior season when you're about to become a millionaire, like I don't care what people do in their off time, but it's just like poor decision making. It's like, come on, man, just keep it together for a little bit longer and you're set. Like that would be the red flag. So that would be the guy that I second that. That would be the guy who I would kind of peg. Like if you can't keep it together now, you're probably not going to keep it together once you do start cashing the check.
Sorry, I was going to say, I'm going to go out on a ledge and hopefully I don't offend anybody out there, but smart people don't fall out of windows. So if you want to question something,
I resent that.
Yeah, it happens. First time was an accident, but the second time, I probably should take a little fault for that,
When you went one floor up and tried it again, yeah, it was. But I'll just say, in terms of like guys that have screwed something up, you know, really late in the process where it's just clearly a failure of an IQ test, basically, I always think now of Justin Houston, honestly, because in that draft, he... Basically, everyone had him going in the first round because it was obvious he's the big-bodied guy. He's got all the skills. He looked like a good pass rusher. I remember that he was constantly being mocked to like the Steelers somewhere in kind of the mid to late first round that year. But then he failed a drug test. It's a marijuana test, like right before the draft, and it was like a couple weeks before when it came out, to the point where I think basically every team just like immediately took him entirely off the draft board. It's like, okay, if you do something that dumb, we're not even going to take a chance on you. And the Chiefs ended up grabbing him in the third round. And that is like still, it's like the one and only thing that people will say in basically in Scott Pioli's defense for his years as a GM is like, oh, well, look, he got this diamond in the rough of this, you know, Justin Houston, who turned out to be this great player in the third round. Like, well, it's because, you know, everyone knew he was a first round talent, but then he just gave himself a huge red flag right before the process. And it was, you know, I mean, I still think it was smart to, if you were confident that wasn't going to be an issue for him, if you were confident that this one screw up didn't totally change your evaluation of him, to grab him with a third round pick, fine. But, you know, and look, I mean, it's obviously worked out, you know, well for him, but you just never know with some of these guys.
No, I agree with you. If you can't pass the drug test at the combine, I mean, you literally have that date circled on your calendar all year. You're preparing for that day. So if you fail that test, That's either stupidity or that's just lack of caring, one or the other.
Well, looking at some guys that are in the NFL right now that have some red flags that are either positive or negative, this was really the idea that was brought up by our very own Chris here, the idea of a Mr. NFL pageant, of, you know, various awards for NFL players that are, you know, sort of like Miss Universe, but you know, we're going to judge them at least on slightly different characteristics, shall we say. And the first category in this is the biggest step forward in 2016. And for me, I think the easiest one here, and the choice that I made was for Mike Wallace. You know, he's bounced around and everyone thinks he's been overrated for a while, but you know, he's an entirely just a pure speed receiver. Asking him to do it pretty much anything other than that is not really utilizing his skill set well. And so I think he was always a square peg in a round hole in Minnesota. You know, he only got two touchdowns there, 473 yards. But that's because Teddy Bridgewater is a short and intermediate guy. And they didn't, you know, run streaks down the field very often. But now Mike Wallace is going to Baltimore, who, you know, is probably the best possible fit for him other than other than Pittsburgh, you know, with you know, the way they like to just chuck it downfield. Flacco just wants to throw bombs all game. I think this is a perfect match, and he's definitely going to have a better year.
I agree with you that he's going to have a better year, but he also failed in Miami. He's just, you know, there's always like those receivers that have a good year when they're like the number two receiver. They're not getting the top coverer. And then they try to cash in. They go free agency. They go to a different team where they're the number one guy. They're getting paid like a number one guy. And they just never live up to it. And that's Mike Wallace, in my humble opinion. I agree with you 100%, though. Joe Flacco is the best thing that could have happened to Mike Wallace. If he can't do it now, it's never meant to be.
Okay, I'm actually going to go with the Dallas Cowboys in general. There's a lot of talent on that team. If Romo can stay healthy, they very well can win that division. So I'm just going to go with their team in general. They're too good to be as bad as what they were last year.
Well, and so just real quick on them, do you think with their top pick, do they try to get themselves a quarterback and both a sort of an insurance policy and a future plan for the post-Romo era? Or do you tack on somebody that's going to help you win now?
I would, if Wentz was available, I'd go Wentz. I'm a much bigger fan of him than Goff. And I think we discussed that a few podcasts back. So if he's available, absolutely. I don't have a problem with him taking Ezekiel Elliott either. That's your win now move. Their offensive line is incredible. You need to switch to a run heavy offense with where they are with Romo and that line. Elliott behind that line could he could get you to the playoffs by himself.
Well,
you got to win now. It's 2016. These quarterbacks play till they're 40 years old because you can't even step near them without getting a penalty flag. Like, I'd be shocked if they pick a backup quarterback when they have a brief window with this roster to make a run. Like, they're gonna take someone that's gonna help them win now, in my opinion. But if we're going whole teams, I mean, I would say the Raiders are gonna be the biggest step forward. But I actually jotted down
surprise
Thompson, the running back out of Arizona. I think they kind of had a muddled backfield last year. I don't know what CJ20K was doing out in Arizona. They had some injuries. But I think it's time for David Johnson to establish himself as one of the better running backs in the league. I think he's going to have a good year. It's a good team. I got a soft spot for Carson Palmer. I think David Johnson would be my nominee.
Moving to the teams that are going to take the biggest step backward in 2016, or actually no, it's the players that are going to take the biggest step backward. I think. I mean, I also have a lot of ideas about teams that are going to move back. But in terms of individual players, and I'm going to be really specific here, my pick for the player that's going to take the biggest step backward in 2016 is anyone whose job it is to catch a ball in Denver.
That's fair.
That's anyway.
Fair. Fair enough, yeah.
Anybody else?
I jotted down Brock. I think Brock's going to struggle, and he kind of did struggle towards the end of the year. You got to remember, Peyton had a terrible season, and he still beat Brock out at the end of the year. And I'm also kind of worried, and I'm sorry about throwing it out there because I know Neil kind of likes Captain Kirk. But I don't know, is Kirk Cousins the guy? He had a run there. No one was really paying attention. It just seems like these guys that once they start, they get off to a hot start, and then the coordinators kind of get some tape on them. They start scheming against their weaknesses, and then they come back to earth. And Kirk Cousins had a phenomenal December to get that team into the playoffs. I mean, I know he's going to come back a little bit, but I wouldn't be shocked if he kind of fell on his face after getting a little bit of cash here. I don't know. Those are my two guys that came to mind.
I had a really hard time picking between Kirk Cousins and Matthew Stafford. I ended up on Matthew Stafford, but I agree 100% on Cousins. I think that honeymoon's over. A lot of their games were won by design last year. I mean, Cousins torched the Saints off like 3 plays. They're not going to have the schedule they had last year. And teams are going to start to figure them out a little bit. He's average. I don't think there's anything really that special about him. And his supporting cast, I don't see getting better. DeSean Jackson will get better next year. He's got another year in the offense.
They're younger receivers, though, like Crowder. I liked Crowder had a good come on, and they've got that tight end. I mean, they've got a little bit of talent there. I like Gruden, but I think you're right. In my opinion, I think Captain Kirk is kind of an average quarterback, and he just he got lightning in a bottle, and he got rewarded for it. Good for him, man. Cheers.
Yeah. Doesn't he, throw it out there for you guys, doesn't he kind of feel like Cal Horton? Doesn't this feel like Cal Horton all over again?
He does feel that way, actually.
Back up in Dallas in a couple of years.
Has he got a neck beard?
Soon enough.
You have a drinking problem?
I
mean, he kind of sounds like he does.
You like that? You like that?
It's a good story. Just, he had a good year. I'll be curious to see if it carries on into 2016 and beyond.
Well, moving on to a much more important category, and this one was brought to us by your ever wonky, always serious Steelers fan, Greg. He suggested we discuss who is the best dancer in the NFL. For me, there's just no competition. It's Travis Kelce. I don't know if you've seen any of his touchdown dances, but every single one of them is a work of art, and you all have to accept it. That was pretty great. It's a good start to the year.
I've never seen one through all the obscenities. Whenever he gets a touchdown, I'm usually so frustrated. I've never actually seen the video. I should dial one up. I actually heard people talking about it on Sports Talk Radio. So good pick in a difficult category.
What do you got there, Ben? We haven't heard from you in a while. Whose cha-cha do you appreciate?
I don't know. There's not a lot of dancing going on in Cleveland, so I don't really see it a whole lot. But I guess if I had to choose, I would choose J.J. Watt.
I went too. I went with Clay Matthews. For some reason, I just kind of like the demon pose when he gets his sack.
All right. Well, moving on to best hands in the NFL, and I'm going to continue to be a homer here. But look, man, it's not even homerism. I can't argue with the stats that are out there. I'm just going to read off two. These were actually tweets from PFF, Pro Football Focus, which is that Jeremy Maclin finished with the best hands in the league at wide receiver. Their words, not mine. He had just one drop on 120 targets. He also had only two drops on 174 catchable balls over the last two seasons. That's two drops in two seasons. To me, there's just no competition there either.
If he had had a little bit faster of a 40 time, he would have been an Oakland Raider. That was a consensus pick. I got no qualms with that. I went old school because I'm an old timer. I went with Fitzgerald. I think Larry Fitzgerald has been doing it at a high level for an extended period of time. Honorable mention, my favorite wide receiver in the league, Antonio Brown.
I had Fitzgerald as well. I kind of figured there'd be a consensus on Odell Beckham. But somebody that nobody really brings up often but has great hands is Jarvis Landry out of Miami.
I've heard that before, actually.
He'll be my second-round pick, then, since Fitz is off the board.
I mean, I think ODB has, like, he has the great highlights. He has, like, the great circus catches, but he doesn't have the same consistency that, you know, that, like, guys like Larry have. I mean, Larry, I think, probably maybe the best ever in terms of just body control of, like, adjusting to the ball midair. I mean, he just does amazing things, like, once he's off his feet in terms of getting himself in a position to cleanly catch that ball. Well, moving on to the defensive side of the ball, we're going to go with the hardest hitter. And although there are many potential nominees on my team, I'm not going to be a homer on this one. I'm going to go with good old Cam Chancellor, General of the Legion of Boom.
Oh, seconded and third, that guy's a beast.
Yeah, that's a hard one to beat.
What do you got, Ben? You guys are usually on the defensive side of the ball. Any big hitters?
the first name that came to my mind was James Harrison, just because of, you know, all the illegal hits he's put on the Browns over the last, like, you know, 10 years or whatever, between Colt McCoy and Josh Cribbs and all that. So my first the first person I thought of was James Harrison.
I actually thought of Dante Hittner. Didn't he try to legally change his name to Dante Hittner?
He did, and he was recently released.
Yeah, and I can tell you, he was terrible. He was god awful last year. Wasn't sad to see him go one bit. And he's a former Buckeye, and I'm a huge Buckeye homer, but he sucked. So he can go whiff on some tackles somewhere else.
I was going to say, real quick, honorable mention, Calvin Smith from Jacksonville. I think he's going to become a much bigger story this season. He's small for linebacker, but he hits like a truck.
Interesting. Well, we now go on to the most overrated category. And, you know, there's a lot of candidates for this. I have trouble because I want to go after a guy who just makes a ton of money. But honestly, the guy that I felt the most disappointed in, like towards the end of the season last year, was Teddy Bridgewater, who I brought his name up earlier. I feel like that team is just so dependent upon the run, and they're kind of boxed in by his own limitations that, you know, they just basically didn't have an offense if you could shut them down on the ground late in the year last year. And, you know, look, all day is not getting any younger. And I don't know, I feel like he's been made to look better than he really is. I mean, look, I mean, he had a decent overall season, but was he that much more impressive than Christian Ponder was?
I think that's fair. I think their offensive coordinator, they've got North Turner, right? North Turner is an awesome offensive coordinator, and I think he would help mask any of those. But he's younger, man. I'm going to give Teddy another year before I throw the towel in him. Overrated is difficult. I hear a lot of people saying Teddy isn't that good for a playoff quarterback. So I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I just got done railing against Captain Kirk, and here I'm trying to stick up for Teddy Two Gloves. I think it's in the same vein. I think it's a fair assessment. I'm just going to give him one more year because he's a younger quarterback. Overrated for me is difficult. Depends on where the ratings are come from. I kind of followed the money a little bit. I went tight end position. I thought Julius Thomas didn't deserve any of the money that he got going down to Jacksonville. And then since I'm trying to goad Steelers Greg into a bet, I'm putting Ladarius Green on that list because he just signed with Pittsburgh. And that guy's like fantasy football fool's gold. People have been talking him up for so many years, and he just doesn't produce. So those are my two guys.
I was warned to stay away from Desmond Trufant on this list. So I'm going to go same team. And I'm going to go Matt Ryan. When's the last time you've watched a game where you felt like Matt Ryan won it?
When was the last time you watched a Falcons game is what I'm asking myself.
That playoff game. Remember, they were a high seed in the playoffs, and it was actually a really good finish, and they just lost it at the end. I guess that was kind of cemented my opinion of Matt Ryan. I assumed he was a good quarterback, but true, I do not watch the Falcons that often.
Ever since Tony Gonzalez retired, I've had no reason.
He loves him. I love him. Absolutely love him as a Saints fan. But he is king of the fourth quarter interception.
Fair enough.
And what about you, Ben? Who is the most overrated player on the Browns?
Oh, on the Browns? Ooh. Probably RG3. He's probably the only person I've been reading things about him. You know, Hugh Jackson saying he thinks he's got a future and all that. And I don't know. RG3 has proven nothing but to be absolutely terrible. So, I mean, if he makes the team, I mean, I don't know if that's an indictment for the talent level at the quarterback position on the Browns or just them trying to save faith. I actually really like the Ladarius Green comment. I think that was probably the first person I thought of with the NFL.
Well, moving on to the most underrated. Now, this guy, obviously, he's gotten a ton of ink over his career, and I'm going to be a total homer here. But I honestly was a bit surprised by all of the talk about him being trade bait for the Chiefs, and that is my main man, Jamaal Charles. Man, this guy, I think he should absolutely be a Hall of Famer. I mean, he's going to retire probably sometime in the next 3 to 4 years, something like that. He's 29. He's going to turn 30 this year. But, dude, the guy has a career average per carry of 5.5 yards. And that's not all just from, like, weird long home runs. This is over a long career, including a career on some really horrible Kansas City Chiefs teams that were starting Matt Cassel and Brady Quinn, and that everybody knew that they were just going to hand off the ball every single down because throwing the ball was just a horrible, horrible option for them. And yet, even when they were dependent upon him, Charles was still averaging over 5 yards per carry, even running between the tackles. This guy, I think he's just been sort of in WITSEC because he's, you know, he doesn't have a real, you know, flamboyant personality. He's a pretty soft-spoken guy. He doesn't end up in a whole lot of ads, and he's been, you know, in a small market. But this guy should be talked about as much as Adrian Peterson, in my opinion. And he just always sort of ends up being the footnote of the discussion somehow.
I mean, this is with a grain of salt. I mean, he's an all-time Raider killer, so I know how good he is. But Hall of Famer, I mean, And as far as the category of underrated, that dude has been in conversations for like number one fantasy football draft for a while. He's had an awesome career, and I can't wait for him to retire. So I can't argue with anything that you said, but I wouldn't vote for Jamaal Charles for being underrated because I think he's a – I mean, he's awesome. People know that, right? Don't they? Is it just the AFC West that knows Jamaal Charles is awesome? Hall of Famer, I would stop short, but – you set the precedent and we're going for homerism. I'm going to go underrated. It's difficult. I went offensive line because I don't watch film. It's hard to say who's good. But I do know that the Raiders have a guard named Gabe Jackson, who is a younger draft pick out of the Reggie McKenzie era. And he's good. He doesn't have the press that some of the other people do in the league, but he's solid. He's rated well. And the Raiders are going to run the ball this year. It's going to be a beautiful thing to watch, especially when they're playing against the Chiefs.
Who's going to run the ball for the Raiders, though?
Hey, Latavius Murray ran. He finished second in the AFC behind Chris Ivory. I know everyone was injured last year, Jamaal Charles and Le'Veon Bell, but Latavius Murray, like, he was right there. He's not consistent with, I think he fumbled a few times, he'd get benched or whatever, and the Raiders might end up going running back in the draft. But I think you could do worse in the world of running backs than Latavius Murray. The K-Train, draft him on your fantasy team, you won't be disappointed.
I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to cheat a little bit, since he's technically a free agent, but I think he's going to retire. Marcus Colston, I think, has been one of the most underrated wide receivers in the NFL for the past 9 years. If you look at the stats, look where he lines up. He's top 50 across the board. I believe has more receptions than Wes Welker, and I think 100 less receiving yards. 72 touchdowns. He and Breeze had more touchdowns combined than Montana and Rice. So somebody needs to wave the flag for him. And since we're all being homers on this last one, I'm going with Marcus Colston.
Yeah, I figured we would be. Well, to continue the homerism, who's the diamond in the rough for you guys, Ben?
Actually, the first thing I thought about was Mitchell Schwartz, who's now on the Chiefs. I remember being astonished at the first of all that he wasn't franchise tagged by the Browns. I mean, here's a guy who, you know, Von Miller's like asking what $20 million a year, and here's a guy who made him obsolete in the Broncos Browns game, and you know the Browns just pretty much decided they didn't need to play. You know, they could play without him. And he goes for a really under market value contract, in my opinion, to the Chiefs. And, like, I don't understand why the Browns didn't get that done. It's just, you know, just another move in the Browns' lore that I just shake my head at. But, yeah, I'm going to talk about a guy who's never missed a snap, like all pro bowler. And I don't think anybody really, you know, I haven't seen him up among the list of one of the best free agent signings or whatever. But, I mean, you know, typically when I think of free agency, I think of teams overspending, and I think you guys got a steal with Mitchell Schwartz. So I would say Mitchell Schwartz.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I because he's a right tackle. I mean, he's not going to be, you know, the sexiest guy who's out there on any list. But dude, I think we got him for. I mean, he's averaging like $6 million a year for us. We locked him up for five years. He's a young player. I mean, I think he's 26, right? Because we haven't locked up till he's 31.
Yeah, he's 26 years old. 26 years old, never missed a snap in his career, and the Browns decided they didn't need that. So, I think you'll enjoy watching him, you know, shut down the pass rushers in the AFC West for the next 5 years.
I'm looking forward to that. Well, that brings us to Mr. Congeniality. And you can take this either sarcastically or sincerely. And I want to give Monty, you the first crack at it, you know, given the fact that Raiders fans are really known for their congenial demeanor.
Yeah, several Raiders come to mind, and I could pick any number of them. No, I'm just kidding. I went with Larry Fitzgerald. I think that guy is, in his entire career, which I think should be a Hall of Fame career, I've never heard one person talk bad about him. He's seems like a pro's pro. He does everything right, and I don't know. I like hearing M-Dub's comments about when he was scouting him out. He still kind of keeps in touch with him a little bit when he sees him. So I don't know. I think Larry Fitzgerald is an awesome player. I think that would be my vote. The dude you want on your team.
Who do you got, Ben?
I guess I would think of Joe Thomas. The absolute epitome of a professional who's played on a bunch of garbage teams. And I would go with Joe Thomas.
Wasn't Joe Thomas the one that went fishing instead of going to the draft?
That's correct.
He and his dad go fishing. I love that guy. I love that. That's fantastic.
What he does every year.
For Mr. Congeniality, I mean, it's another one of those things that's tough because you don't want to be too much of a homer. But at the other hand, I think you really have to be a fan of the teams in order to get to know a guy well enough to see, you know, because no one's paying as much attention to these guys, you know, unless you're really a fan of the team. And I just want to give a shout out to the guy who I actually, you know, dissed earlier in the program, which is Matt Cassel. I mean, there was a period of time when there were a lot of fans that were the Chiefs fans that were very irate with Matt Cassel. And I always sort of defended him because, look, I mean, it's not his fault that we gave him a stupid contract before he played it down for us. And it's not his fault that, you know, I mean, we just shouldn't have grabbed him and given him that money in the first place. I remember when I got a tour of Arrowhead, they brought us up to the boxes and they showed, you know, this particular like big executive box is actually for Matt Cassel and his people. Because like he actually made it a part of his big contract was like, he's got to have a box. And I remember initially thinking like, man, like what a prick to like, you know, like I'm going to soak up one of these boxes and, you know, as a part of my contract. But then I realized like, well, look, I mean, for anything, he's always going to be on the field. And what they explained was like, actually like, yeah, it's like he sort of realized, I think that he probably didn't deserve the money. And so he was going to like leverage part of the contract process. Like, you know what, if I'm going to get paid, if I'm going to have this big opportunity, I'm bringing everybody with me. And so he would always like fill up the boxes in KC with all of his friends and family, like every single time, and pay to fly them in for games. And there's all sorts of stories of him just being, I mean, he was always a stand-up guy, and there's all sorts of stories of him, like the cool things he was doing in the community, and he would never seek any recognition for it. I think a lot of them actually only came out after he left the team, where people would just say like, hey, could you send me some, you know, autographed gear for my, you know, disabled son? And he would say, oh yeah, I could just come by the stadium. And actually, rather than just giving him some autographed stuff, he would like bring the kid like around, like let him like work out with the players and spend all day with him. I mean, he did all sorts of that kind of stuff. And it's not really well known because he's not played very well on the field for anybody throughout the course of his career.
I'm going to throw two names out there. The first was Alex Mack, another former Cleveland Brown. He does a lot of work with recruits with the military. My younger brother actually had a chance to play flag football with him a few years back. And apparently it's something Alex Mack did multiple times a year. Any recruit, really all they had to do was call and ask, and he would show up and play all-time center or all-time QB, depending on how you feel. Just complete stand-up guy. To go on the flip side of it, and I know this has been a really nice, warm and fuzzy segment, but Junior Gillette's just a huge piece of crap. the opposite of everything we've just said, with the exception, you know, in addition to all the multiple women that he's beat in public places, he came out today in response to Will Smith's death, talking about how he just really never liked the guy.
Lovely.
That's the kind of character he has. So, you know, sorry, Neil, if you're listening, you seem like a great guy. Junior's trash, and I hope he blows out his Achilles again.
Well, and on that note, we move on to, you know, I guess another somewhat warm and fuzzy category, which is pay that man. And you mentioned Neil. He submitted his own answers to some of these. And so it just reminded me of him. But his pay that man nominee, by the way, is Jordan Reed. And I kind of agree. That guy's making no money and he's one of the top tight ends right now. But my own nominee for pay that man is Ryan Fitzpatrick. And I know I've gone on this exact same rant a few times on this show, so I'm going to not, you know, overdo it again, but I think it's kind of crazy. This guy is still hanging out there. I mean, granted he's up there in age and he's put out a lot of inconsistent tape over the last few years, but I mean, look, last year he went 31 touchdowns, 15 interceptions, and really took that team from, you know, mediocrity or less to being a playoff contender that just fell short. To me, it's nuts that he hasn't found a home and a decent contract.
I agree.
That was who I had penciled in too. Andrew seems like a really nice guy, one of the best super fans that we've had on this draft. And I think there was a podcast I listened to where he brought up the name Geno Smith, and I could have just hallucinated it. I don't know. But I don't understand what the Jets are doing. Just pay that man his money. Like
John Elway, I think, has kind of solidified it. The market for a quarterback is what it is. You don't negotiate the price of a Big Mac when you go to McDonald's. You don't mess around with quarterbacks. Just pay them what the going rate is, or you're going to lose them and end up starting the franchise, Geno Smith. And then the only other name that came up to my mind was just because, if you're a fan of the podcast, it's just Desmond Trufant. I don't know what he's getting paid. I don't know what he's worth. But don't disrespect him and make sure you pay him.
As much as I hate the Atlanta Falcons, Desmond Trufant's pretty great. I'd love to see him in the AFC soon.
Who do you got, Ben? Who do you think needs to be paid in this league? Or on the Browns?
When I think about the Browns, the first person I think of is Mitchell Schwartz, and I just like flabbergasted of what happened, what the Browns did with that, outsmarting themselves or whatever. I know we're in that Moneyball era, supposedly, or whatever, but like when I think of that, and I just think it's like a shameful, almost fireable offense that Mitchell Schwartz isn't on the Browns right now and isn't set on your team. I just can't get over that. And so that's still like the thing that's still bugging me. So if I were to say anybody, I would say him. I know somebody was talking about Alex Mack earlier, and I would kind of agree. We got a little taste of what Cam Irving can do last season, and it wasn't very good. And I know this isn't on this new regime's, fault or whatever, but when I think of like Alex Mack and what went on with the shenanigans with his contract with Ray Farmer and, the fact that Alex Mack isn't on the Browns right now, and instead we're going to have to, have a new right tackle and a new center just because our team just doesn't seem to prioritize the offensive line. I think those are the two things that just come to mind.
I'm going to go back to being a homer here. I'm going to go Delvin Bro. A lot of people know him because of the story. He broke his neck in high school and so on and so forth. But when it comes down to it, he flat-out balled last year. He consistently shut down the number one receiver. He's the only bright spot in that secondary for us last year. So we need to find a way to lock him up and lock him up for a while. A great character guy, hard worker. And, again, I think there was a four-game stretch where he gave up a total of 3 catches for 11 yards. He's playing
not
very
bad.
Well.
Then again, if you're a quarterback playing against the Saints, why would you even bother throwing that way when you have wide open receivers in every other section of the field?
Yeah, that was the problem. We got Kirk Cousins a lot of money this year. He should be a huge Saints fan. I think he just bought Brandon Brown our new house. At least he should.
All right, well, we are going to have to leave it there. This has been Next Fan Up, the podcast by the fans for the fans. And once again, if you want to catch some of our past episodes or see what's new with us, check us out on Facebook by typing Next Fan Up into the search bar on Facebook and give us a like, and you'll see everything popping up into your feed. Also, follow us on Twitter and at NFU Podcast. And if you, that's pretty much the complaints department as well. If you think that that your team rep is not really understanding, the greatness or awfulness of your team, and you got a bone to pick with them, go ahead and tweet at NFU Podcast, and we'll get you in touch with a specific fan that you need to be shouted at. Although, also, if you haven't heard your particular super fan for your team for quite some time, there's a chance that you might be able to step into his shoes. We do take applications and also fan and hate mail at nextfanup@gmail.com. If you want to, send all of your praise to me specifically on Twitter, I am at Clayton Nicholas. And what about you, Ben? If people want to wax philosophical about the greatness of the Browns, what would be the best way for them to get in touch with you?
It would be through the Facebook group.
All right, great. And what about you, Chris? Where can we hear all of your lists and breakdowns, since you seem to have an endless supply of them?
I am at That Patron Saint, and also feel free hit me up on Facebook on our on the FU page, and continue, keep them coming. I'm taking all the abuse for these lists, and I love it.
All right, Well, I know I am going to be greatly interacting with you, Monty, on Twitter, because it seems like there is just no end to your delusions that you like to spread there. But if anyone else wants to join in, how can they find you on Twitter?
Yeah, I would tweet at NextFanUp, and I will find you. If you want to disrespect Desmond Trufant, I will back up him and get you going. If you want to, you know, try to put a little shade on the Raiders' ascent and bring up things like Jamarcus Russell and Robert Gallery and Rolando McClain, and it is draft season, so all's fair in love and war. But yeah, just tweet at NextFanUp, and I'll find you.
Yeah, actually, just as sort of a listener's test, you've heard a lot of mentions of Desmond Trufant. Just to make sure that you're listening, we'd like you to go ahead and go to Twitter and tweet Desmond Trufant sucks at Tim is hiding. That would we'd really appreciate that.
I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't do it unless you got the day off.
In case you haven't noticed, Tim is our Atlanta Falcons super fan, and he has some strongly held opinions about Desmond Trufant. Anyways, this has been Next Fan Up. Listen to us. We got some good stuff coming up. Next show will be out on Thursday. Then you'll be hearing us again next Monday. And there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, you know, this game is four quarters long.